true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Afternoon drunk. I've never heard that before. I love that. Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Where do you get that term, afternoon drunk?
I just said it. That's all. I think the term is usually day drunk or day drinking.
Day drinking, right.
And then I just was like, it's hot in the, it's warm afternoon. I was like, so that's where it came from, out of my brain pan.
I think you should tell the people what we did on Tuesday.
All right. Well, Tuesday, let's just say we got our steps in. What did you call me, Katie? I'm a staging assistant.
You are.
A licensed staging assistant.
Licensed and certified.
Certified by, yep, because I can hang art, which is a very specific
skill.
All right. What was I going to say about all that?
Well, tell the people what we did.
What is that noise? Oh, there's like an alarm going off far in the distance. So we staged a gigantic house, you know, very large main floor, and then a stairs up to the second floor and a stairs down to the basement, which was also very large. Not really basement, just the lower level in a gated community, gorgeous on the hillside, incredible views. It's a mansion.
It was a mansion.
It was a mansion. Was that your largest staging job ever?
Largest so far.
Yeah. And we had a full complement and crew and up and downstairs and moving, you know, what was in the 90s when he bought it, like the finest furniture.
Right.
Which meant it was like
heavy as fuck.
Heavy as fuck, stained, carved wood, touches, carved. And wood and glass, and everything had a glass top on it that added another 40 pounds to each piece. And we had to move a lot of it out into the, thank God we had.
But let me just.
Two guys stronger than me on it.
Well, four guys total. And then three guys from the moving company, the rental company,
right.
Four of our movers and three of their movers. And just to paint this a little more clearly. So the main floor Cassidy's talking about had a ginormous, beautiful carpeted living room, dining area, ginormous. Behind that was a kitchen with two islands, not one island, a center island and then bigger one that wrapped around it. And then another living room and dining room off of that whole second kitchen area.
Yeah.
A huge three-part outdoor patio upstairs, a huge outdoor patio downstairs. Also downstairs.
With a putting green. There was a putting green.
With a putting green. Also downstairs, the downstairs area was a ginormous third living room.
Yeah, it was kind of like a giant game room den space.
But huge.
Yeah.
So big that I turned it into a living room plus a dining area. And there was a bar and a bedroom. And then you go back to the main floor, master bedroom, smaller bedroom, four bathrooms total. Onto the third floor, another bedroom. Oh, and
every bedroom had a full bath attached.
Yeah, another bedroom.
They were all ensuite.
Full bath. Like, so it was four bath, four bedroom, three living rooms, three dining areas, the equivalent of three patios, and a view you could fucking look at and just shit yourself and be dead.
Yeah.
So bottom line is, I'm tired. I don't know about you.
So then I worked with you all day on Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday was insane.
Tuesday was nuts. So yeah, you were with me all day Tuesday and in like all day with a total of seven dudes moving things. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Now the guys from the furniture rental company were impressive. They were carrying entire couches by themselves. I mean, we helped them sometimes, but they also, if we weren't there, like they could like lift it up and find the exact pivot point of balance and then just carry it in the air.
Just one dude carrying a full couch.
Yeah.
Or like a full, huge dining table.
It wasn't a fold-out couch. It was just a couch, you know, but still, it was impressive.
Yeah.
They were awesome.
Those guys were cool. Yeah.
So we got our workout.
I'm still recovering.
But something I'll say, that I really noticed the last few days for myself, because I also then Wednesday worked a gig where I had to drive really far in traffic and then work by myself at a feet first gig. And it was just another long ass day of lots of work and tired at the end, but not at all bad tired. It was like, oh, I worked. I fucking worked. I earned this tired. I'm not in pain. I didn't hurt myself. I don't feel used. I don't feel wrung out. I don't feel like abused. I just feel like, oh, I did some work. Like working for you, I really enjoy. Just like I did things all day.
That's great.
And I did them.
I know exactly what you mean. That's how I feel about. Okay, we have to just say, for the sake of our listeners, like this is a human design lesson. Because he's talking about, I mean, what I hear you talking about is the correct use of the generator sacral motor. So the sacral motor, when being used correctly, feels like they say the entire purpose of the sacral motor is to burn its energy correctly so that you're exhausted by the end of the day and feeling like it was a useful exhaustion.
Yeah. Interesting.
The kind of fatigue that comes from, ugh, I got to drag myself through this and it's really hard. And I don't want to thing is the wrong kind of exhaustion. Then we're like not going to be fulfilled. We're not functioning correctly as ourselves. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But generators who we're supposed to exhaust ourselves by end of day. And oftentimes they say generators don't sleep well if they haven't correctly used or burned off all that generator energy by end of day.
Yo, that's real. Cause it's been months of not sleeping very well and I've definitely slept well.
That's great.
I also gave myself some tasks on previous days that I've had off recently.
Yeah.
But I still feel like even though it was like I generated the project, but it was kind of like once I knew what I was doing, then it was like I'd been assigned a task so I could do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like,
well, sure.
You know, I didn't create the.
Well, no, but it was created in response. Listen, this is a common.
Yeah. It was something that needed doing.
This is a common misunderstanding too. Generators think like, because you hear the words respond and you can't initiate. It doesn't mean you can't start anything and it doesn't mean you have to wait for people to tell you things. It means like when you create a thing in response, you've responded to something in the environment. So in your case, this had to get done. That's a response to something required of you in the environment.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a bunch of woodworking and stuff on the house and painted these cabinets and painted these drawers and sanded them and waxed them and spent the whole day doing that. You know,
did you sleep well?
And I slept well. I've been sleeping well, except for being interrupted by the catalytic converter thieves that then kept me up for 2 hours because my heart was racing. What?
How can you tell it's catalytic converter thieves?
Oh, you know, there's a distinctive sound, and it is a Sawzall, which is a particular kind of motorized on the underside of a car. If you hear that, if you hear a sawing noise at 4 a.m., it's a catalytic converter thief. There's no question.
Okay. What the fuck? So did that make you feel like you had to go get your car and move it?
Oh, no, it's because I didn't tell this story. That's right. We haven't talked about this. I'm dead asleep. And I'm awakened by, my window is on the street. So I hear everything that happens. And I immediately like sort of sit up in bed and to lean out my window, I have to like sort of sit up and then sort of kneel on the bed. Because it's the head of my bed is the window. And I, you know, pull my curtain aside and I look out and I can see a car parked next to the car in front of the apartment just uphill from me. So like, you know, my driveway, then there's the car. And I can't really see the people, but I know what's going on because I hear the noise and I see a car parked next to another car, which is also, I kind of know. And without thinking, I just open my window and I go, hey, the police have been called. They hadn't yet, but
nice.
But the response I got was very threatening, of course, like mind your own fucking business. You better fucking not come out here. You know, really intense.
Okay.
Threatening. And I know people literally have been shot confronting catalytic converter thieves. So I was like,
of course.
And then I was like, I just drew a target on my own house. Like, I think, I don't know if they saw where I was yelling from, which window.
Right.
Because I was, rather than like yelling it out the window, like an alarm, I like stuck my head out the window and leaned out because I was just okay. in response mode, like, ah.
Yeah.
And then I was like, fuck. And I, like, you know, closed my curtains and, like, didn't turn my light on, so they didn't know which window I was in. I was like, fuck. And then, you know, I heard about 10 more seconds of cutting, and then the car raced off. I left a note on that car just to say, hey, I don't know if I prevented this or if I just slowed them down, because I couldn't see by looking under the car. They texted me back and said, yeah, they got it.
Fuck.
And it doesn't take them but 30 seconds to get that shit. It is so fast. It's just bad design.
What's the deal of, what can you then do with it? You sell it?
Yeah, they extract precious metals from it. And Priuses are particularly, so like I read up on this, any catalytic converter gets you, you know, $60 from the illicit salvage yard that will take it and go.
Oh. But what do they then do with it?
But a Prius will get you like $150. So if they hit like 3 or 4 Priuses in a night, that's their night's work.
But what do they then do with, what is the person who gets it?
The scrapyard is, they can extract, apparently the metals that are used in a catalytic converter, or the way a catalytic converter works creates those metals. I'm not totally sure how it all works, but like has a palladium and zirconium and zinc. I don't know, some precious metals.
But what do you do with that? They sell that?
Yeah, then you just have raw precious metal that you can sell.
But who the fuck is buying raw precious metal?
I don't know. Then they turn, someone then sells that back to the car manufacturers, who then use it to make another catalytic converter. I don't know. It's all bullshit.
Wow.
So Priuses are the big target because they actually are worth more. There's something about how those catalytic converters work that are, and then like Honda Elements get hit a lot just because they're high off the ground. So you just like stick your head under there, jump, jump, run.
So were you worried about your car?
No, luckily my car that night was parked deeper in my own driveway with another car behind it.
Oh.
So you can't really get to it. I park in the street all the time because we only have enough. We have like 3-4 cars at our house and only room for 2 in the driveway. Anyway, no, I was literally, what was running through my mind were fantasies of having my window shot out.
Yeah, of course. It's Oakland.
And yeah, and just, it was scary. Also, I had drawn attention to our house and I felt scared about that. And like, and my heart was racing and I was like, took me like 2 hours to calm down. I called Rom. Robbie was up because they're on the East Coast. And this was at like 4. And so I messaged Robbie just to be like, oh my God, this just happened. And they called me back and told me about
EFT.
No, TRE, maybe trauma release, something where you shake your legs, you lie on your back and you shake your legs for a really long time until your legs shake on their own. I couldn't get to that point, but just doing that actually helped.
That's good. You should try EFT in those situations too.
I also did some EFT.
Oh, good. Yeah, it helps me so much.
What was interesting though is that the next day I didn't have a hangover, like a trauma hangover, because...
Common thing for...
Well, yeah, if I just... having that squirt of adrenaline and all that stuff and all that intensity, I can often be still kind of, my head can still be spinning. I can be thinking about it.
I gotcha.
But I think because I attacked it with my own, you know, like I dealt with it. I went into it.
Yeah.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think I released most of it. It was exciting.
Jeez. Sorry that happened.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like the fun kind of exciting.
No. But that was all a sidetrack from, yeah, I've been sleeping better because I worked hard.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. Yeah. I'm debating about a few things on my mind. Like, we talked about something in healing class today that I thought would be useful for people to hear. It's not at all related to that, but it just came to my mind right now.
That's fine. That.
Is there anything else? Like, what else do you have to report? Any other updates?
I've just been in a good space lately. I'm really feeling, I'm living in my body. I'm feeling sort of planted in my own power.
Mm-hmm.
You
said something cool to me yesterday about, I wonder if you'd be open to sharing the thing about choosing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I think I can share some of this. So, you know, as I shared in the cast here, Denise and I broke up and then are in very good communication and in fact are really connecting in ways that felt like had long left us in the past.
Yeah.
Like we've really reconnected emotionally and just sort of energetically because it kind of needed that ass kicking of breaking up to sort of sever the I would call it the sort of ties of demand or
obligation.
That's the word we're looking for. We're just severing the energy of obligation and then going to literal choosing of every moment.
Right.
And, you know.
And since, yeah.
Yeah. And so go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah. And both of us, I think, are experiencing an incredible amount of just like freedom of and confidence and I keep using the term that sounds like such a like self-help term, but it's true for me, like standing in my own power.
Yeah.
And as you started to say, like, and this is actually Denise's framing, I think, and I really appreciate it. It's like, I get to choose whether or not I want to hang out with you. I get to choose whether I'm going to go to the gym. I am choosing it.
Right.
I do not have to do it. I am not obligated to do it.
Right.
Everything I'm doing is coming from a choose.
So this brings up a fun thing, which is there are systems of teaching that talk about most people make the relationship, capital R, mean. They actually call it death. In other words, relationship, the way America holds it, like you're married and then you're done. Like the done, like everybody's scrambling for the one so you can find the one and then be done scrambling.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, the problem is done means unconsciously, we don't think of this consciously, but what we're buying into is I don't have to grow anymore.
Right.
I'm not looking anymore for something. I'm settled and done.
Yeah.
And so what happens is people start to slowly die. And death, but in this case, we mean like they start to slowly unconsciously function from unconscious obligation. Settle, obligate. What are we doing? And it's always a we. There are just these collective unconscious assumptions that we live into. So the real next level ninja move is how to be in relationship, committed, so there's that safety, and not functioning from obligation.
Yeah.
That's, for me, that's the one day at a time, every minute, checking myself, am I doing this thing with my partner because I think I should, and I'm worried he'll feel bad if I don't, or am I choosing it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not easy.
And it shows up in our professional life absolutely as well, just making choice, literally. I mean, and I grant it as a luxury, and it's a beautiful thing that I'm able to do that. But like the ideas of commitment and choosing whether to do something or not, and sometimes having to make a choice between two things, both of which feel like commitments, but then I'm like, okay, well, which commitment do I want to rank higher, or which way do I want to choose this? And if I'm able to,
yeah,
when I actually inspect, not what should I do,
uh-huh, what would I prefer,
but what would I prefer to do this time?
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. It feels so much better and so much more fun.
You could say because it's coming from your own true desire or your true self or your true essence rather than obligation. Even if the obligation is to like some idea of professional advancement, that's an obligation.
You literally just plucked that out of my brain, by the way. Thanks. Like my example just happened. I got offered this, not a big role, just sort of a fun ensemble role in a no pay, small budget SAG film. But like it's a pain in the butt commute, but it would be fun to do because I've been wanting to just do anything on camera. And unfortunately, the shoot interferes with one of the very few feet first days that I've had for a while. And I,
yeah.
And at first I was like, wait, am I trying to honor that because I should?
Right.
And then I was like, no, I'm actually trying to do I'm shooting the film because mm-hmm. I said I would take film if I could. Then this person made me an offer. So obviously I have to do what they asked me to do.
Uh-huh.
And when I actually sat with her, I was like, no, I want to get paid and do the feed first thing.
Yeah, man.
And like, that was a weird switch of what we would standardly look at as the like, no, don't just do feed first because it's the paying, you have an obligation to your boss. Do the art, man. Instead, I was like, no, it's actually the opposite. What I'm choosing is the opposite in this case.
Yeah, it was the truth for you in this moment. Yeah, and you hit on a nice point too, I think, which is that the truth is the truth right now. It's the now truth, not like the permanent truth. That's another thing. Coming back to the idea of relationship, this is where relationship gets deadly, is because the commitment to it feels like a permanence, and then the permanence feels like permission to stop.
Yeah. Whereas you have to choose your partner every day.
Yeah, but also, yes, you do. And
but then I just said have to, and that's a...
Well, if you're going to choose commitment, you're choosing your partner every day. But what I'm talking about is you have to choose for yourself. I'm making my choices in my relationship with Eric based on, is this actually what I want to do in the moment? But what people do is they go to sleep in relationship and just do what the we would want or what the other would want.
Yeah.
And sometimes what the we would want is correct for you.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not. So it requires presence in every moment to discern. There are plenty of times where it's like, I can feel this distinction between it would make me feel lighter, brighter, and happier to go out with a girlfriend tonight, or I could just collapse into the comfort of our couch. And if I really need to rest and collapse into the comfort of our couch, that's when I choose that. But what I really need is the stimulation of a night out with someone else, with a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever, a man who is a friend, then I have to choose that so that I don't resent our relationship later. And then the sex dies too.
And the challenge of that is also being able to receive the flip of that yourself, like to know that your partner also really needs to have that same level of freedom to choose. And that you not personalize when they make a choice that wasn't the one you wanted.
Yeah, that's very relevant for a lot of listeners. I weirdly don't have that problem at all. I have 0% that problem. But like every time he chooses for him, I find it so appealing.
Yeah.
I want him to go the fuck away a lot.
Yeah.
Like, please go hang with your friend. Then A, I get to be alone. And B, it makes me feel like you have a life that is not just me. And now I'm like more interested in you. But I'm glad you said that, because for most people, it's the opposite. People get threatened by the partner, or for a lot, I shouldn't say most, but for a lot of people.
Well, and then there's the concept of compersion, which was a term coined by the poly folk, but it's relevant to everybody in every part of the world of, can you get the joy? You got to go out and be with your friends and that's what you wanted to do. God, that makes me happy, because I love when you're doing shit you want to do.
Yeah. So it's compersion is being happy for someone else's happiness.
Yeah. Getting joy from someone else's pleasure.
Oh, that's cool.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On the simplest level. Now it can be conflated with codependence. So there's, you gotta find those disentangled version of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it literally came, I think, out of the idea of not being jealous, instead being jazzed that, you know, your partner's getting laid. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have a fair amount of that. That's, I don't know. It's interesting. Eric and I have different levels of tolerance for, although now that I say that, that's actually different now. I'm going to tangent off that. We had a thing happen recently that was really sweet. That was like, I used to be so aloof as a six line. But just like aloofness is a quality of six lines. But I used to be so aloof and detached that I'd be like, do whatever the fuck you want with whoever the fuck you want. I don't care. To a degree that was like a little heartless and cold.
Yeah, that can hurt at a certain point.
Yeah. And he has a female friend who shall remain nameless, who sometimes does things that to me land. She does girlfriend shit at him.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't do boyfriend shit back, but he doesn't stop her.
Right.
Right? I'll give you an example. She writes him letters and postcards that are like, Dear Eric, in longhand, I was at a museum today and I saw this piece of art and it made me think of you. Love, winky face, person's name. And we'll send him a postcard in the middle of the day. And she doesn't live far away.
Mm.
She's not in Europe. She's not that far.
Yeah.
Or she'll write a whole like 3-page letter to him. Like, I was, this happened. And then to be fair, she's regularly talking about dates she went on and like whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Whenever she has a problem, she comes to him first in a way that's like, like when she's going through it, he's hearing from her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently went, you know what? This bitch needs to understand this man is off the market. And I was like giving him some shit about it. I was like, why is she sending you love letters in the mail? What is this love notes shit? And he's like, she's not. She's a little overly dependent on me, but it is, she knows I'm not interested and she's not interested either. She's dating 95 people. And I was like, that's cool. I don't feel like my place is threatened. Like I am clear. He's not like leaving me for her. What bugs me about it as an eight, leaning into my eightness, is like, it feels disrespectful to me. Because if I were her, I would never write my friend. I would never send you while you're in a relationship with Denise, a long-winded letter with love, Katie, at the bottom. It just wouldn't feel right to me. I'd be like, I'd call you and be like, bro.
Yeah.
It's just me. That's like what I would do. Because for me, it feels respectful of like, I acknowledge that you two are doing that. And you and I do this other thing. I'm going to acknowledge that with my behavior out of respect for this woman in your life.
Right.
That shit right there is the opposite of what I used to do, which was like so the other direction of just being like, whoever can write whatever and I don't care. So there's a part of it that I kind of love and he kind of liked it. He was like, look at you being all attached to me and shit. And I was like, good point. Yes, it matters. I admit it. I am attached. This bitch is peeing on my lawn.
Right.
It's my lawn.
Now,
again, I don't feel threatened. Right. The relationship is not threatened. That is not what this is about. It's about, I have that respect thing that eights have where it's like, did you not think how this could land?
Right.
You didn't even think about there's a woman in that house. It could land shittily for you to send that, depending on how the woman holds her relationship with the man. You didn't even fucking think about that because you're just thinking about you.
But does that form of their relationship predate you there?
Totally. And not only that, when I've broken up with him twice, she's been there.
For him, as a friend.
Oh, 1,000,000%. I would never, let's be clear.
Yeah.
I would never in 1,000,000 years be like, don't be friends with this woman. I would never say that to him. And we've talked about that too. I'm like, you should be. I hope you keep her. She's like family. She's not going anywhere. And I don't want her to.
Yeah.
I just don't like these little choices she makes that feel to me like girlfriend behavior.
Right. I mean, I understand that's how it lands for you. And I just have such a different perspective on it as.
Tell me.
Just that it is the form of their relationship. It is the rituals they have built up. It is the.
Yeah.
It is their form of communication. It is the joy, the way that they have created dialogue. Now, obviously, yes, from the outside, zoomed out completely. If I knew nothing about her and nothing about him, and I just saw someone writing long letters.
Right.
In our, you know, pretty, in our heteronormative gendered world, I'd be like, oh, woman writing man letters. That could look away. That could look a certain way. But knowing that it isn't that thing, then it's not. Like, so it, like, she shouldn't have to change, I think, in my heart, she shouldn't have to change their long-standing energy of relationship because of what your version of what one should do might perceive it as.
Uh-huh.
Because you know it actually isn't that. It just, you know that it looks that way, and that feels disrespectful.
Yeah, but it's not.
But that's personalizing someone else that has actually nothing to do with you.
I don't think so. Because I don't feel personally, it's not, relationship isn't threatened.
Right. Well, then what's disrespectful about it?
Is that it is, okay, let me back up. Another piece of it is that, I'm going to own more of this for myself. It's like, I had a long history, this is good, we're going to unpack it, of having weak boundaries with men because I was very into, I do what I want, I'm free, you do what you want. I sleep with this person and that person and these people and who cares? And I, you know, everybody's free to everything. And then I stepped on a lot of toes I didn't know I was stepping on because of thoughtless self-centeredness where I was like, get over it. This isn't about you. I had a lot of that. And I guess I would call that entitlement. Like, come on. Oh, she's so hung up on her heteronormative man, woman, relational dynamic. She can't just like go with the flow and let me fuck her boyfriend. Or not even fuck her boyfriend, but behave overly intimately with her boyfriend when it's there were behaviors I was exhibiting with people's partners that were flirty and dependent and talking all the time and leaning on them like a boyfriend or like a dad, even, that I had to learn it wasn't actually considerate or kind of me to do that because it wasn't respecting those people's boundaries. Like, they had an agreement and the man was doing some shit that the other woman didn't feel respectful of. So I, through being confronted by several women who were not okay with that, I thought about it long and hard. And I realized whatever my point of view is about what relational dynamics can be and what boundaries can be loose, that doesn't mean my boundaries are right and that person's boundaries are wrong. Like, I was in judgment of people having tight boundaries around their heteronormative, monogamous, whatever.
Right.
I was like, those stupid breeders and their
right
whatever, they're stuck in the 1950s restrictive whatever. And then I came to understand it's very judgmental, superior, arrogant, and really childish of me to be cranky at other people for their boundaries. They have boundaries and they've set them. They have agreed together to set certain fences around their house. And I'm going like, your fence is dumb. I'm just going to hop it. So because I went through that and, but not only went through it in the sense of like, it's not like I went through it and then obligatorily, back to the theme of the day, was like, I guess I have to behave correctly now. It was more like it hurt my heart to think of, like, I did a lot of heart work. And then my heart opened and I realized it doesn't matter what I think about what people's boundaries can and should and would be. Their boundaries are what their boundaries are, and I'm disrespecting them.
Right.
So there was a lot of work there to open my heart, to heal my heart, to let go of things, to process pain, to understand boundaries, to respect boundaries, to honor boundaries. Those are three different things. It's a lot of work to wake up to like, oh, you actually have to just respect the boundaries that other people decide are their own boundaries if you want to be welcomed into people's lives.
Now, that you, I mean, I think everything you've said is absolutely, but that boundary right now only exists in your mind in an implied way. So the disrespect isn't occurring.
No, it exists in both Eric and my minds and in our mouths out loud in a direct disgust way that is clear.
To her?
Yeah.
Has she been said, hey, you know what? These letters feel too intimate.
No, but that's my point.
That's it.
I know.
But they aren't too intimate because they aren't a threat. They're only intimate in your mind and his, and I don't know if they're intimate in his mind yet. All I'm saying is the implied disrespect doesn't exist until this person has actually been informed that.
Yeah, but I disagree.
This isn't welcome because it is welcome. He is welcoming these letters.
No, but see, this is the whole thing we talked about. So he was like, I don't love these letters. They're not the best. And he.
That's different.
I know. And he has weak boundaries with her where he doesn't engage it at the level she does, but he doesn't stop it. So my conversation first was with him. I was like, you understand that you're being in allowance of something that. Have you thought about what you're in allowance of? Is this what you want?
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I didn't think about it from your perspective. So that's on me. I didn't think about it from your perspective, about you at all. And he's like, so that's a good point. And he's like, and also I hadn't thought, he's like, my thing with her, here's where he's at with her. Cause this has been for many years now, their dynamic is what it is. And that's fine. She over leans on him regularly. And he's like, I have a pattern of, he's like the opposite of me. He's so allowing of people.
Sure.
He can be like overly allowing of people where there are no boundaries ever. And then nobody grows and nobody learns anything. And certainly nobody's confronting anyone and nobody's telling anyone the truth. Everything's allowed because he's so fucking loving and allowing, which is beautiful, but can also go out of balance. If you never have boundaries with anyone ever, no one has any idea who you are. And also, you're not honoring who you are and what matters to you. Anyway, so we had that conversation and he's super like, yeah, geez, maybe I'm a little too allowing. And I'm like, I want to be clear. I love how allowing you are because I'm a dick and you love me.
And you let me
And you've
it.
Been very allowing of me and I've been able to grow through all the allowance you've provided. But let's make note, I grow through it. I don't just go, I'm going to keep behaving however I feel like behaving because you're allowing me to.
Right.
That's childhood.
Right.
Okay, so when he said, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about how it might land for you. And I also had to explain to him, you're teaching her by not confronting her about how much she leans on you, that she doesn't really, she talks a game about wanting a partner, but she has him.
Right.
So you're teaching her to be disempowered in her dating life because she's so comfortable always coming to you for her boyfriend needs, all of them except sex. That she's trying to break her pattern where her relationships are just sex. But guess what? She doesn't really have to break that pattern because she has you. So I think he's doing her a disservice by being, and this is where the distinction between nice and kind is important. I think he's being too nice. He's not being kind.
Yeah.
The kind thing from my perspective and my understanding of nice and kind is I'm telling you the truth so you can grow and get what you actually want. Because what she keeps saying for years now, she actually wants is a functioning LTR.
Yeah.
Long-term relationship with a man who she's in love with, who she has sex with, and is her boyfriend who provides emotional needs and intimacy. That's what she wants. But she already has it with this fucker. So she's not looking for it, really. So I was like, you actually have to cut the fucking cord and let her free.
Yeah.
With your boundaries and your no. And he's afraid of that, and that's his work. Yeah. Now again, I'm not saying he shouldn't be friends with her. I'm saying there shouldn't be girlfriend expectations from her on him.
Right.
For her benefit and my benefit and his benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would yet everything you've said totally makes sense and I'm with it because it makes more sense in the greater picture of like it actually is girlfriend energy. It's not just, oh, I see it that way because of whatever heteronormativity. It's like, it is all but sex.
That's it.
It is partner energy, not just best friend energy.
That's right. And like, what's cool is she, or maybe not cool. What's inconsistent is she'll get distracted by the next dude she's dating. And for a couple months, we're not getting letters and he's not talking to her four times a day.
Right.
But then she breaks up with someone and then she's back all the time. And I'm like, she can come back, but like, it can't be all the time because she's not growing then. And neither are you. And it's like a total disacknowledgement that I exist.
Huh. Yeah.
So nobody's winning.
Yeah, in that I can see what you're saying. Because I think where I was getting hung up, and I'm still a little hung up on, is the idea that her behavior, what I was hearing at first, and then you define it much more clearly, but what I was hearing at first is that behavior is disrespectful of me. And that was the only part. I'm like, it actually has very little to do with you. It has a lot to do with Eric. I think it might be disrespectful to, really, it sounds like to her own growth. It's counter to her own, you know, health and stuff, but like that it was directly disrespectful to you.
I'll show you how. It's not an intention. Remember the difference between intent and impact?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think she's intending to disrespect me. She's not out there like, this is about Katie Rubin that I will call Eric now.
Right.
That's not what's happening. But the impact is disrespectful.
No, because respect carries knowledge in it.
I don't think so.
I can't disrespect you if I don't know you.
I think that's not correct. It's inconsiderate too. Doesn't consider me.
That's different. Inconsiderate is absolutely.
Yeah, but it's respectful to consider someone. Look, if I go, wait a minute.
This is a language question, really. But disrespectful is an act, is an action. It's active. It is saying, I am saying, no, you don't deserve respect.
No, I think you're talking about intention again. I'm talking about impact.
Yeah.
I don't think she's intending anything.
Yeah. So it's not disrespectful if there's no intent.
No, I disagree.
So that's a language question. I just don't think that that's what that word means.
I do. You could look it up.
Intending to not respect.
I'm going to say this full thought one time just so I feel like I've said it. Again, I don't think her intention is anything negative and has anything to do with me. But what I learned in, like, frankly, these trainings where we teach people how to have difficult feedback conversations, you know, these corporate things I lead sometimes through different companies that train us to do this, is it's like, it was for me, it was very helpful to come to understand the difference between intent and impact. I've been incredibly disrespectful of people in my past by being inconsiderate of them. I didn't intend to be disrespectful to them, but the impact was disrespect. And so because I've learned it on my end, I'm hyper attuned to it in other people. I think too, because this particular thing was so charged for me on the other end, when I was her and I did the work and got there. So this is my beef with a lot of people, is like, this is me owning my own. This is not like a fully healed thing I'm saying now. I have frustration and resentment about, if I had to do all this fucking work to understand all these subtleties, you fucking should too.
Yeah. I mean, I wish everybody was caught up.
I mean, it's nonsense. Like, it's crazy. Like, you can't, I mean, people never will be ever.
Well, I very deeply feel you on that. 100%.
Yeah. So I'm still working through that. Like, that's a thing I've been hitting in my own sessions with my trauma processing that I do with me lately regularly, is like chipping away at. It's under it is this heartbreak about what humanity is not willing to look at in itself. Like, people, most people, they don't give a fuck about growth. They don't want to fucking change at all. And I have lifetimes of trying to help fucking people change, and they fucking don't fucking want to, and it gets exhausting. And then I'm pissed and tired. But I can own my own Al-Anonism in that. Like, that's some Al-Anon stuff I have to look at, meaning if I'm that invested in other people changing, that's on me.
Yeah.
However, I'm pissed at God because I'm like, don't send me to Earth to, like, be a change agent and then make people fucking changeless.
Yeah. Have all these assholes not fucking changing.
Ugh. So anyway, back to the thing. I hear what you're saying. I don't see it that way.
Right.
I can totally respect that you see the word disrespect differently. But for me, I think that when we unconsciously are inconsiderate of how things can land for people, it is disrespectful of them, even though we don't mean for it to be. It's not respectful because I'm not thinking of them. Now, everybody does it. We go to sleep on a lot of shit. I try not to, so you could too, bitch, with your letters, is how I feel sometimes.
Yeah, and I think let me unpack my own hang-up, because it is a hang-up on, like, why do I have to push back so hard on your this one word for you? Like, it isn't even really necessarily with you individually on this issue. It's always wanting to make sure for myself that I am, and I'm wishing other people would, this is also, I wish other people would, basically not making it about you.
You when it isn't? Right.
When it isn't.
Right.
And so when I hear that, I hear this, like, I don't know what their story is. I don't know why they don't know. I don't know why they haven't figured out that they shouldn't do this thing.
Yeah.
Especially if I haven't said it to them.
Right.
Or you know, and I do think that I wish people were not unconscious, but I also know that people are blind for so many different reasons. Some people are actively blind. Some people are, like you said earlier, you used to behave. They need to get over it. So you knew.
Yeah.
That there was something they needed to fucking get over.
Right.
And continue to behave a certain way.
Totally.
That, I would 100% call that disrespectful, because you have an awareness of your blindness. What I think a lot of people are very unhealed.
Right.
And I'm try to have compassion for, unless they really cross a boundary that's like, no, you fucking can't cross that boundary.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Right.
You can't hurt me. And if it's hurting you, I also want to own that. I also hear that there's you were saying, like, I don't care, I'm not threatened, but it feels disrespectful. And that sounds to me like it's causing you pain. So I'm like, well, let's uncouple from that pain if you can, because if it's not, then it's not. But I now hear more of the context, and I agree with you that it is.
I was telling the story meaning to say, like, this is growth for me, because you have to understand, I come from investing 0% in long-term romantic right. relationships. And now I'm like, don't pee around my man. And he's like, yeah, girl, thanks for loving me at all. Like, it was for us, for somebody with attachment trauma who was terrified to attach, That's the other thing you have to look at here is the attachment.
Right, it's growth for you to fucking care.
A lot of growth.
Yeah.
And in fact, it can be very spiritual bypass when people do this whole, everybody can do anything all the time.
Nothing's personal. It's all your own.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because if nothing's personal, then there are no boundaries. And then if there are no boundaries, there is no you.
Right.
And if there is no you, then you're not being a human being, which is called spiritual bypassing.
Right.
So where are the lines? It's very individual and situational.
Yeah.
And so it's been fun for me to come into like, you know what? I'm like taking ownership of this relationship and I'm going like, this is my man and we have agreed to like be monogamous together. So don't fucking pee on him. Even if your pee is not meant to seduce him. What a weird metaphor.
Right.
Even if...
I've always found it strange though when like someone like, a stranger flirts with your boyfriend in a bar.
Yeah.
And then one's reaction.
Sure.
Is to go and fight that stranger.
Right.
Like they have no
idea.
The problem is your partner.
Yeah, that's right.
Your partner's the problem. That's who you need to have beef with, not with this other person. But that's not this situation. It's much more intimate than that. There is history and there is boundary.
Yeah. And also, let's be real. Like the way it's actually playing out in reality is he and I had a nice long talk where I explained all this. And then he's like thinking about what does he want to do with his, is he going to be a little more boundaried with her? Is he going to express it maybe? Like, nobody's being pressured or hurried into changing. Nothing has been...
Right.
There's no urgency around it. It's just like, I needed him to know I have peed around him. And like, I don't really like that she doesn't think about that. It doesn't feel great that she's in her own little bubble so deeply that she hasn't even thought about how it could land.
Right.
So maybe he could have a little more boundaries with her so that she kind of gets that point, which benefits her in the ways I described earlier, because she will have to detach a little and find her own damn man to pee around.
Yeah.
So anyway.
But I think the key to all that we just described, communication. You guys upped your communication game, and it would be great if he could also up the communication game with her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
because she won't grow until she's let know something.
You know this? Yeah, totally. This brings up such another interesting thing to me. Like, so that's, yes. So I think we're good there. Is anything left dangling for you?
No, I think we're good.
Okay.
What's up, y'all? Rami here. It is deep spring in Malvern, Pennsylvania, in Westchester County. And I am sitting here soaking in a little bit of outdoor time before I have to go into the black box that is the theater I'm performing at. I'm doing a play I really love called Hurricane Diane at People's Light. That's the name of the theater company. And yeah, it is spring. It's like 2 days ago, it was cold and rainy, and right now it's 80 degrees. You know, it's a whole situation. And it smells so good out here. And for days, I have been walking around sniffing every tree, and I cannot figure out what is making this deliciously sweet smell. It's kind of like honeysuckles and cherries. And no tree smells the way the air smells. So I'm just kind of chalking it up to overall spring blossomness. Yeah. And there's a couple groundhogs here. And a bunny. You know, and a squirrel, of course. Well, that's it. Gotta go. Rami's rules.
I've been looking at this whole... It's just very interesting. I think about like my dad and myself and his wife who just passed in November, and my sister, like my dad's side of my family, and how we're Jews. Like, we're Jews. Like, we don't do Jewy religious things.
Long O Jews.
Just meaning, like, I'm actually quite not Jewish in the religious way. Like, I don't know anything about seders. I didn't have a bat mitzvah. But what I mean when I say that is culturally, there's a kind of, like, behavioral directness and loud talking and intellectualism and, you know, Jewishness.
Yeah.
Like, we're just kind of Jewy. And Eric has tended to date Jewish women. He likes Jewish women. He always has. And he is so not a Jew. Like, his family, they're like white. They're WASPs.
Uh-huh.
Like, if we're categorizing blanketly, which I'm doing, which is bad, blah, 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 fuckity fuck. But they are. Like, as Jewy as the degree of our Judaism matches the degree of their fucking white people-ness. In the following flavor of white people-ness, because there's many flavors, right? WASPy sort of don't talk about anything confronting. Everything is allowed. We're very sweet and nice. You know, I'm changing the quality of how I talk so nobody feels threatened by my aggressive tone of voice. Everything is very, you know, I always feel like a total bull in a china shop around his family because I'm just like, hey, how are you? They're like, oh my, we're made of glass and we're in a museum. And I'm
we actually have china in our china hutch.
Something like, yeah, exactly. So I've been thinking about like, there are like therapeutically, oh God, there's so many things you could say about this. I'm trying to formulate this thought. Like Jews, if we're going to, in a general way, some of the trauma healing that Jewish folks who are I'm talking about cultural American Judaism that is like big and bombastic and aggressive and all of that. Some of the growing can be in the direction of softening and heart opening and becoming a little more subtle. And some of the growth for WASPy people can be powering up, getting a spine, being more direct, speaking up, more boundaries. So like, it's just so interesting to think about when you put one person from each of those cultures together. I mean, the ideal, right? We have this fantasy that like, I bring him into his power and he brings me into my softness. And that has been true for us. But it's funny to think about what to make of an entire culture of his whole, like his mom and his dad and their cousins and the people. There's all these people over there and they just all live this way all the time. And my perspective coming from so much Jewness is like, how do you survive on earth like that? And then their perspective looking at me is like, why would you be like that? Like it's, you know what I'm saying? From your own locked in, I just find it fun to think about different groups of people. We are living so differently right amongst each other. Even just like different kinds of white people being like different kinds of white people. And I don't actually think, how do you survive on earth? But that's the first response I have. Do you know, are you getting what I'm saying? There's nothing, I'm not talking about a healing perspective here. I'm just literally.
No, but just that, you mean, how do we coexist because we're so fucking different, but we mingle all the time?
No, I mean, it's just fun to think about what they must think of me, given what I think of them.
Right. And
because I'm like, you guys are so far on the delicate scale. Like, how do you go to the grocery store without like getting bowled over by life? And then they look at us and go like, why are they yelling all the time? They could just relax. I've had so many people be like, they come to dinner with my dad and my sister and they're like, is he mad? And I'm like, no, he's just being Jewish. What are you talking about? That's all.
Yeah. No, I feel that.
It's just fun to think about. Yeah.
I posted some, it was just a video of some sort on my Facebook. I just reposted something the other day, vaguely connected to this. And it was maybe actually sort of what has been inspiring, why I was arguing with you a little bit about the tiny point of language. Someone was filming something like on a street corner and people kept walking in front of the camera. And one of the guys said, like, to just some dude standing nearby, he goes, why are people such assholes? It's like they don't care about us. They're like, you know, they're mean and they just ruin our thing. You know, they're trying to ruin our stuff.
Right.
And the guy just, he was a really kind of like groovy dude, kind of chill, kind of quiet, little mousy. And he goes, and then he just went on this incredible monologue about like, I actually don't think most people have the presence of mind to be mean or angry or shitty to you. I think they just don't know. I think most people, I don't think you can ascribe negative connotation to most people's actions. Sure, sometimes you can, but for the most part, most of us are just stuck in our phones. I don't know your trauma. I don't know what kind of day you had. I don't know what just happened to you yesterday. Maybe you're frowning just because you just read a weird text. You have no idea that I'm shooting this video. And he just kind of laid it out, this idea of ascribing negative negative motive to people's actions when it's probably not 99% of the time. It's mostly vacant actions. It's vacant of motive. It's mostly just clueless. It's mostly just in our own little world. Yeah. And basically he was saying it has nothing to do with you and your stupid camera.
No, 1,000,000%. I think it's so true. I think it's 100% true. It has nothing to do with me that this woman writes him love letters.
Yeah.
And I'd like her to stop.
Yes. And I hear that.
That's all. But you're right. Of course, in the abstract and in her little unconscious bubble, it has nothing to do with me, but it has an impact.
Yes, it does.
It's like you said.
So it feels disrespectful. So I get that's different. Yeah.
No, it is disrespectful. It's not just that it feels disrespectful. It has the impact of disrespect. She doesn't mean to, but it's, you remember the time on here a long time ago? I don't know if you'll remember this. It was helpful for me. You said, we were talking about, oh God, I can't remember the actual thing we were talking about, but you were like, maybe it was your mom or it was that other woman who did the work that your mom did, that we both know this woman.
Yes.
Anyway, you were like, my mom used to teach this concept that, you know, people say like, nobody can hurt you.
Right. And then she went and stepped on that person's foot.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you say like, nobody can hurt you, that's all you perceiving them hurting you. And then she went and stepped on their foot and went, that hurt you, right? I did that to you.
Right.
So
you're right. It is.
Intent is different from impact, but that doesn't minimize the pain of impact.
Yeah. So it is like disrespect through negligence or disrespect through
inconsideration, not thinking about it, being unconscious.
It's not you disrespect. It's
no.
Huh? Disrespect.
It's unconscious behavior that leads to disrespect. And the thing is, again, it hits my particular beef with humanity in general, which is everybody's fucking asleep.
Yeah.
Now, again, that's a thing I have to work on because they are, and they're not waking up today.
Right.
So, you know, what are you going to do, Ruben?
Right. And we go around every day. You do it too. I do it too. I have disrespected 7 people probably today, vaguely, tinily, in tiny ways.
You think?
No, because I haven't interacted with anybody.
I know I do it inadvertently. I know I do. I also spend probably too much energy, if we're real, really trying not to. Like I spend so much energy trying to care about how I'm impacting people, like probably to a codependent degree.
Well, this would be really picky language thing, but like I was on a phone call today. I was talking to my equity rep she was asking me some questions about how it was to work on a contract. And I found myself at a certain point just cussing a lot and stuff, not like angrily, but just saying like, you know, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then in the back of my mind, there was a moment of like, I don't know this person's level of like
comfort with that.
Okay. Comfort with language.
Yeah.
So on a tiny, teeny, tiny level, just through just my cavalier attitude,
I see.
It could be argued that that was possibly disrespectful of her. I don't know.
Right.
No idea.
Right.
But the level to which the impact matters is also at question, which is not much at all.
Right.
You know, or I could also say, yeah, fuck you. I don't give a shit. And that's on me. But I could claim, wow, if that's going to disrespect you, then I don't know what to say.
To 1,000,000%. This comes back to we all get to have our own boundaries.
Yeah.
Like if your boundary is like, listen, I cuss, and if you don't like it, that's cool. You probably shouldn't hang out with me. That's your boundary.
Now, if she stated a boundary at any point, if she goes like, whew, language.
Yeah.
I'd be like, got it.
Well, but if whew, language is one thing, but could you please not speak that way in front of me is another.
Yeah.
Because like, you could be like, I don't like that language. And you could be like, that's okay. I'll still be saying it.
Right. Or I could say, oh, I'm happy to not say that language because I don't need it right now.
But that's not necessarily a boundary.
Yeah.
For her to go, ooh, language.
Right.
That might just be a comment.
Sure.
Anyway, it gets nuanced.
Right. But yeah, if I've learned a boundary, then it is more actively disrespectful to cross that boundary.
And that comes back to this whole thing where I was like, you know, this is actually about you and your boundaries to the boyfriend. Like you got to have some.
100%.
Bro. How about think about me in this a little bit?
Yeah.
And again, it's all moving very slowly and nobody's under any pressure to completely change anything, blah, blah, blah. This is a good talk. I think there's a lot of nuance in here that
I dig it.
Is good for people to hear.
We still have 2 questions that we benched from last time.
Let's do it.
If we want to pick them up.
Sure.
One's silly and big and one's deep and big.
Okay.
Let's do Carolina's first.
Okay.
Because I think it's pretty damn cool. This is from my housemate and dear friend, and also a pretty avid listener of the podcast.
Let me shift my energy a little bit here and just get out of my...
Oh, yeah. Are we good for that?
Yeah, yeah. Just give me a second, because that was all like me, Katie, as my individuated... Which, real quick, that brings me to something I want the listener to understand. There's the relative and there's the universal. And everything I'm talking about there is from my relative perspective about where my personal relativist boundaries are. Now we're going to go into... I'm expanding my awareness in this moment, choosing to go into the Akashic records of this person, for the sake of taking a more universal perspective about her relative self. So it's important to understand that one can use one's ability to go into the absolute as a way to spiritually bypass into the absolute at all times. But that would be spiritual bypass. Mm. We're not meant to live in the absolute all the time. We're meant to be relative individuals with boundaries.
Yeah.
That's the point of incarnating. You come into incarnation to be an individual being that is what it is. And all this, like, I can deal with whatever and I don't take... That's spiritual bypass. So here I am now shifting gears for the sake of helping someone into a more universal perspective so I can hear wisdom, so I can give it to her for her relative comfort and healing. Anyway, that's just a concept I want people to understand about how I'm operating. Like, I can be someone who speaks from a very universal place, but I'm also a relative human individual with boundaries.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have her thing?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to... I was waiting for you to do a little shift. That was the shift.
Yes.
Great. All right. This is a question on spiritual guides.
Okay.
As we have talked about in the past, my dream space is very active and crossing many layers of spirit consciousness. Not sure what this was called. In some of those dreams, I believe I have met a guide that crosses with me between states, a dog man.
Mm.
Talking to a friend that is Kemetic, the images of this being is very similar to the god Anpu in the Kemet religion spirituality. In past readings with other healers, I've often gotten Kemetic and indigenous symbols and ancestral connections.
Mm.
Has this guide or companion been with me for many lifetimes? Guidance from Anpu feels like it would be connected to ancestors. If so, is there anything I need to do to honor this connection and strengthen it?
Hmm.
I often speak to Anpu before bed, asking for support and a gentle journey through my dreams and visions. I didn't grow up with this deity, so I'm very new to understanding our connection. Thanks for all you do.
That's cool. Okay, give me just a moment. I'm going to connect with her a little bit more deeply. Okay, so yes, there's a long history of past lives that in the tradition that Anpu is from. Is that how you say it? Anpu?
A-N-P-U.
Okay. And what was the tradition?
Kemetic.
Kemetic with an M?
Kemetic, which is Kemite, which is connected to ancient Egypt.
Oh, cool. Okay. That's interesting. So, okay, let me sit with this. Okay. So you've had many lives. There were lives where you were in that tradition and an active worshiper of this particular being. And it's in your lineage as well, in the family. A bunch of people in your family line were in that, have literally been in the practice and in the... I want to say the religion and the teachings back in the past. And it is a useful connection, very much so, a useful guide, a useful spirit guide. Yes, it is one of your main spirit guides. He is one of your main spirit guides. And you're asking, is there more I can do to strengthen the connection? Is that the question?
Yeah.
And or is strengthening it necessary? Is that the question?
Is there anything I need to do to honor this connection and strengthen it?
Okay. It would be great if you had an altar. Maybe you already do. Does she say anything about that?
No, she doesn't. I don't know if she specifically has an Anpu-oriented altar.
Okay. It'd be great if you had an altar to like an Egyptian altar in general. And Anpu is sort of in the middle, in the back, in the middle. And then to the left and the right are other whoever you feel like putting left and right of him. But all from the Egyptian Kemetic tradition and lineage. It would also be beneficial to read about him as much as you can. Read about his, I want to say, like his familiar. Does he have like an animal spirit that helps him?
I mean, he is a dog man.
Meaning half man, half dog, or meaning?
Yeah, basically. Or dog, that's how he incarnates, maybe? I don't know. But I know he is a dog man-like.
Okay. But that's, there's something else. Like, they show me, like, the eagle and the...
It's also known as Anubis in some, if you know Anubis.
Okay. They show me the eagle and the fox and, like, two or three or four other, are they gods? No, other beings that walk with him in his life and in his journey. You could include them, and that would be good to add to the altar. And then read about them as well. And then meditate on, like contemplatively ponder, meditate in the frequency of that whole lineage within that tradition. And I mean Anpu himself's lineage within the tradition. So the other beings I'm mentioning are all connected to him, like a little tribe of his own. There's a specific energetic frequency to him that does elevate you and is very useful to you in your waking life now. And you can choose to tap in energetically to his frequency and sit there and receive it. And then what starts to happen is you feel, and this is probably already happening, but you feel his influence in your day-to-day choices. It's funny because this also has to do with power and boundaries. Like, he brings through an awareness of boundaries, the need for boundaries, like in all settings, particularly work.
It's interesting because he's like the god of the dead or like crossing over. So I wonder if that
determination, boundaries, determination, strength, wisdom, insight, and not being a doormat.
Huh.
Okay, that's done.
Cool. Right. Yeah, I was just looking up a little bit more about Anubis, which is the more well-known version of the same name. He's the one who weighs the feather in the heart. I don't know if you know that myth.
No.
When they want to... one of his prominent roles was as a god who ushered souls into the afterlife. He attended the weighing scale during the weighing of the heart, in which it was determined whether a soul would be allowed to enter the realm of the dead. And I remember seeing it in like, I've seen it in a few different places, including Moon Knight, the Marvel show, which wasn't very good. But he places a feather in your heart. And I forget, like, if your heart weighs more than a feather, then then you pass through. Or if it weighs less than a feather, you'd pass through. Or if not, something about weighing it against a feather.
Okay.
That's all. I don't know. That's just fun, interesting stuff. But the idea of the boundary and like the idea of boundaries and like the crossing over. I don't know if that's relevant. You got energy for one more question?
Yeah.
Great. This one is the one about BTK, the Korean, the K-pop band.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let me tap into her for a second.
Yeah. Start with getting into Margaret.
And then, can you read the question?
Yeah. I'm an avid K-pop fan and have been in awe of the worldwide movement that has grown up around the Korean group BTS, which does not mean behind the scenes. Could you read the Akashic Records of BTS and share what their purpose is and how these seven individuals have come together to such a phenomenon of love across the world? They seem like such a rare gift of light And I'd love to hear the record perspective on why them and how they've managed such unprecedented popularity across nations. Do you need their individual names, or you just want to...
I'm pulling this up really quick to look at them.
And she gave the context of us and how we read the records of our show at the very first thing. What is its purpose?
All right. Let me feel into this. I'm going to get into the records of BTS, the boy band. Okay, this is tricky because there. I'm sorry. I just have to give it how I get it, you know? There are so many assumptions in what she's saying and so many projections built into the question that I'm having a hard time. Everything I ask has yes, no, also kind of this, but a little bit that. So like, can you read it again? Because it's she's talking about they have this thing of light and whatever, but that's her projection on it.
Right. She said they seem like a rare gift of light to the world to me.
Right. Are they a rare gift of light to the world? No. Okay, now why? Let's just start there. Each person in this group has a fair amount of light. You're right. And together they activate joy for so many people. Are they a rare gift of light? They just give it to me so strong. No. Can you talk about why? Why are they not a rare gift of light? Sometimes the astrology and the alignment of the stars and things fall into place for people because it's part of their karma to deal with the challenges and the difficulties of being famous. And the challenges and difficulties of wealth and all the projections that come with it, all the solipsism that comes with it, all the drug and alcohol addiction that can come with it. Like, there's a lot those people are going to go through that has to do with the playing out of their karma. And yes, they have light a lot. They're all pretty damn light, each of them as individuals. The journey of their band, if you want to call it that, however, will not be pure light. And so there's that. Then there's, because A, nothing is on this planet, nothing is in this world, pure light, whatever. And B, the living at the heights they're living at, it comes with a lot. And in their case, it's like some of the people running things from behind the scenes are not in the light at all. They may have some financial stuff coming up that's not going to be great. They will. They're really like loud about this. They're bringing me to, remember the band TLC and how they went through, they were like very, very famous. And then they lost all their money. And Whitney Houston, her family stole all her money. You know, I don't know the details of that, but it wasn't good. now, but she's also asking here about the gift to the world, right? Like the gift of light to the world. So, yeah, they're providing a lot of light and joy and love and levity. That is for sure. They're pointing me to like, so are many pop stars and many figures. So I think they're hung up a little bit on the word rare. They keep being like, it's not a rare gift. There's a fair amount of people doing this kind of thing. But yeah.
Do they have like a designed purpose?
Okay. Does this group have a designed purpose?
I said the word designed. She just said purpose.
Yes. Okay. Let's see. What is their purpose? It's twofold. It's to activate joy and light and levity for audiences and to bring unification of hearts and rooms together, joy, love, light, empowerment, and to show later everything that comes with being the people doing that at that level and to teach lessons of projection. Every person, you know, we all project a fair amount onto the people we like a lot, and bands and celebrities and famous actors get projected on the most. So when things shift for them in the future, people who have followed them the whole time will have an opportunity to go, wow, I had no idea all that was going on, which will then give the people watching an opportunity to understand what we think people in the limelight are going through is not the reality of what they're going through. So that's not directed at Margaret, to be clear. That's just about, if you're asking what is their purpose, it's twofold for all of humanity, or I should say anyone paying attention to them. It's those two things.
Cool.
Did that track?
I think that tracks. Yeah.
The way the question was framed, there was a lot of pressure, the way I was hearing it, to be like, yeah, their gift and their beauty, and they're here because their gift and their beauty, and was very like positive judgments on it, which is nice.
It's like confirmation bias in the question.
Yes. So there was a, because consciousness is very invested in articulating the dynamism of truth and the dynamism of reality, it's not comfortable just being like, yes, let's focus on that first part of their purpose. It wants us to understand both sides. There's always, and this is a great teaching for me to always remember in all of us, there's always light and dark in every situation, in every individual life, in every moment. That light and dark are working in concert with each other to create. Creation is born out of friction. If there were no friction, there'd be no creation. And creation is life. Life is creation, for better and worse. So consciousness always likes to come back to that. Anyway, there you have it. Love you, Margaret.
That's it, I think, for now. I just have to sign off because I'm about to melt.
Me too. Love you. Do your work.
Oh, you do your work. Talk to you soon. Let's hang out. Let's do something.
Okay. Love you. Bye-bye.
Get good rest. Love you.
Do your work. Do your work. Do your work. Do your work.
Do your work. Bye.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take care of TCP.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese. For We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
Just cut this. Cut what I just started to say.